Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 259, recorded July 21st, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello!
We're in three today.
We have a special guest.
Four? Oh, right, because of your turtle.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, we have a special guest. Our daughter Gwen is joining us for the podcast recording today. And her turtle, love turtle.
Her stuffed turtle.
Her stuffed turtle that she got at Waikiki Aquarium for her first birthday. She picked him out herself. And she has kept ever since.
Mm-hmm. So. Say hi, Gwen.
Hi.
Okay, so we're going to start out. Who have we got on the list today?
We have JR in Eastern Kentucky, and Chris in Tomball, Texas, and Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
Okay, you're going to have to let us know if you get background noise on this one. We're
the swamp cooler's on.
Yeah, because it is kind of hot. So hopefully that's not too bad. It's far enough away. We're hoping it's not bad. But if it is, let us know when we will make sure that doesn't happen in the future.
Right.
We could record downstairs or something.
That's true.
Okay. So.
JR, we got JR first, and he's still giving us updates on his CO2, the baking soda one.
Mm-hmm. Citric acid baking soda.
Right. He says, the mix ran out today on this retest of the below formula, just 23 days this time, a little short of the 30 days I achieved last month. I'm going to run this mix one more time before I try others, but we'll be out of town for a few weeks, so I'll wait till the second week of August to fire it up again.
So his mix was?
Bottle A, he had 400 grams of citric acid to 600 milliliters of water, and in bottle B, he had 300 grams of baking soda to 200 milliliters of water.
Okay, so this past one, just to summarize, same mixture as the previous time, but he had less, it lasted less.
Right, didn't last as long.
Right, so, okay, that's good to know, and we'll find out more once he comes back and fires it up again.
Yep.
Nice, thank you, JR.
Should we go to Chris in Texas?
Yes, let's go to Chris in Texas.
He says, just a quick update on my situation. I live in a house with remind us what we talked about last time.
Oh, yes. He was wondering about water temperature because when the water was coming out of his pipes in Houston, he gets 80 degree, mid-80s, like 84,
coming out
85
of his
degree
tap.
Water coming out of the tap.
Which is kind
when it's
crazy.
As cool as it comes out. It doesn't come out any cooler than that.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about some possibilities, and we said, you know, it's if the water change isn't too big, and if, you know, there's not that big of a temperature, he's coming out at 78, 85, it's, you know, it could be smaller, but it's not a huge difference if the water change is not too drastic. So maybe it should be okay, and you shouldn't have to worry about it. And this is his reply.
Yeah, so he says, I live in a house with underground pipes and have been surprised by how warm my water gets. We typically keep our house around 75 during the summer, so that isn't it either. After talking with others in a local aquarium club, it seems my situation is not normal. Most in the Houston area have water temperatures below 80 even during the hottest months. While listening to your response, it finally hit me that less than a block from my house, there is some sort of municipal water station hidden behind some walls and fencing. My best guess is there is some above-ground piping and storage where the water can get heated since it is exposed to the sun and the air temperature stays between 80 at night and close to 100 during the day. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that could definitely contribute.
It's not underground long enough to cool off.
Mm-hmm.
Only being a few hundred feet away, it likely doesn't have time to get cooled down before reaching my house. Right. As for my tanks, I have two 150-gallon aquariums that were my biggest concerns. One is an Mbuna tank, and the other a South American mixed tank, including an Oscar and a few other larger fish. Both are well-stocked, so I like to do around 50% water changes weekly, hence my concern. I decided to just do my typical change this last weekend and see how the fish reacted. While the temperature did increase a few degrees in a short time, they seemed perfectly normal. I imagine there are some natural variations in water temperature between shallow sunny patches and deeper shady spots in their wild rivers and lakes, so temperature fluctuations may be normal for them. It was probably a lot of worry about nothing, but I don't want to intentionally do something that may harm my fishy friends. Thanks again, Chris.
Well, I think it's always good to think about those things and kind of
little
question
things make a difference. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. So I don't think there's any,
good that
any
you're
problem
thinking
about
it.
That's always good. And like you say, especially in the South American cichlids case, I think there's going to be more variation in temperature they're going to encounter. With Mbunas, probably less so, just because they're in such a big lake. Mm-hmm. And they tend to inhabit specific depths and everything. Like, Mbuna cichlids are at a very particular part of the ecosystem. So they're not likely to go up and down in the water column to the degree that they would encounter large fluctuations in temperature. But I think you're right, that I don't think it's going to cause a problem for them. It sounds like they're doing fine, so...
Hopefully it continues that way.
It's a strange situation, but it doesn't sound like it's going
to
be life-threatening.
Things that... You know, you don't necessarily think to look for when you're looking at a house, you know.
Right.
How far away are the water pipes exposed to the air? You know, that's
not
something that you usually think about.
Right. I know, I didn't think about that when
we
did. No,
it never would have occurred to me.
Although I did think about sinks and how far they would be away from tanks and where
and
we could put tanks
outlets.
And outlets and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But didn't think about everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Matt sent us a photo, which Gwenny likes, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty.
Do you want to read this part right here, Gwen?
Matt in Perth,
Western Australia.
Here's a photo of the biggest new discus. You can also see the blue beaten up discus on the left. Hopefully that improves now that there is more discus to spread the aggression around. The two are on the right in the background are the other two discus.
Other two
cool.
New discus.
New discus.
Good job.
So they look
Gwen.
Like they're quite a bit smaller.
These are pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the color patterns mm-hmm. and the contrast. On
that one
the
looks
discus.
Like it's blue.
Which one?
Yeah.
This one here?
That one.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, he called
is.
Them blue, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for sending that photo. We'll put that up on the page. And hopefully, like you said, you'll get some dispersal of the aggression and things will calm down a little bit for you.
He sent us a longer email after that, too.
Yeah, this is a separate email.
He says, "Hello, Kelly and Russ. I bought some new discus. I sent you a short email before this one showing the biggest new discus off. Isn't she beautiful?" Yes.
Yeah,
she is quite lovely. "Although I have not had great luck with discus recently, the planted aquarium is looking spotless these days, so I figured I shall risk it. I fixed the problem with the Siche CO2 unit. It turns out I had not installed the previous carbon cartridge correctly." Does that count? For the alliteration award of the email, cartridge correctly.
I think so. Uh-huh.
That was pretty good. So that is why it was leaking carbon dust into the water. Well, that's good. That's an easy fix, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also was having a frustrating time with my Eheim 2217 canister filter.
I think they usually say Eheim.
Eheim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
The one that I said needed replacing. Well, it turns out it did not need replacing. The problem with canister filters is getting them primed after cleaning the filter out.
Mm-hmm.
Bubbles of air like to get trapped at the top of the filter where the impeller lives. My local fish shop had some helpful advice regarding this problem. The thinner outlet hose attaches at the top of the canister filter, and the thicker inlet hose attaches at the bottom. I let some water out of the outlet hose into a bucket to make sure there are no bubbles in the hose itself. Then I reconnect it to the top of the canister filter. I also run some water out of the inlet hose into the bucket to make sure it is free from bubbles, but I do not connect the inlet hose yet. I then turn the filter part of the inlet hose down into a bucket and turn the valve to open. The only way for water to then get into the filter is via the attached and open inlet hose at the top of the filter. The water rushing in then forces all the air out of the canister filter. Once water starts coming out of the inlet hose into the bucket, I closed the valve. I reattach the inlet hose to the filter and then turn it on. Thus, there's no loud noises and the filter is primed perfectly. Wahoo!
Oh, that's a good bubble flushing method.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little complicated on paper. It probably makes more sense, like,
no,
visually.
No, when you actually do it, yeah. But it's good to have a
Make us a little video, Matt. We can stick it up on the YouTube page.
I like that. Yeah, but thank you for sharing that. I think that could be helpful to a lot of canister filter owners out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, "I bought three discus. One giant one, as you can see from the photo, and two smaller ones. I'd say the big discus is about 10 centimeters or 4 inches in diameter. The smaller two are around 6 centimeters, 2.25 inches in diameter. I also bought 4 electric blue rams and 4 new plants. I cannot tell you the species of plants. As Kelly might put it, I got the pretty species of plants." Yay! That is how Matt does it. Or he says, that is how Matt does put it. That's a good, you can put it that way. And you can put it that way on my behalf. That's good. That's a good way to put it. I have started dosing the aquarium with Flourish Excel, Iron, and Trace. These are the fertilizers that my local fish shop told me they use with their giant planted tank that looks amazing. With the functioning CO2 unit, cleaner water, and Flourish nutrients, I'm hopeful that my plants will start to grow rapidly again.
Yeah,
Sounds like a good plan.
I have used, as a fertilization regimen, the Excel and the Trace.
You like Flourish stuff.
I do. C-Chem does great stuff. And the Excel and the Trace together, I've used that on a number of planted tanks that I haven't dosed with CO2 and noticed good results.
Mm-hmm. So they help anyways.
When you add CO2, it's even better.
But
generally, if you do... the tank is not super high nutrient, high light, really super crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have usually a good enriched substrate, and you just use those two. At least I'm just saying, for my case, I should back up a step and say, in my experience, when I've used that particular recipe, you have an enriched substrate, and you add Excel and Trace every day, that the plants have done really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good mix. And I haven't used the iron. The Trace does contain the iron, and the enriched substrate that I use also contains iron. But I'm sure that's a good way to go, too.
Yeah, should be a good plan. Matt continues, sadly, I discovered that Sebastian has been eating my lovely little sea urchins.
Uh-oh.
I now do not have any left. I am tempted to try to remove Sebastian and convince the local fish shop to take him, but for now I suspect that'll involve a lot of rock removal and disruption to the marine aquarium. Not ready to deal with that just yet. Aside from Sebastian's diet, the nanomarine has been looking great. The algae growth is still an issue. However, once I have scraped it off, the rest of the aquarium looks fantastic.
That's good. And like we saw in the pictures last week, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
It looks great.
It's really nice. He says, I came home the other day after walking the dogs to find my nanomarine aquarium had turned white. The water was full of a milky substance obscuring the view into the tank. Some careful observation later, and I discovered my turbid snails were spawning.
That's cool.
What are turbid snails?
Turbid snails are a kind of snail kept in marine aquariums
They wear turbans on their head.
They're kind of, I guess you could sort of imagine their shoulders shaped sort of like a turban, that people wear in their head. And they're good for eating algae.
It says one snail was upstream and was releasing spurts of cloudy white sperm and eggs into the current. Another was a few inches downstream and was also spurting out a white liquid. I can only assume one of these was releasing eggs and the other sperm. The whole spawning event lasted about an hour in total. It took about half the day for the whole aquarium to become clear again, so I think I can eliminate my turbid snails as possible candidates for the eggs I noticed earlier on a rock. Because this was the first time, I suppose, or you would have noticed already. Yeah.
Right.
Perhaps the turbid snails were spawning first and now... Oh, the turbo snails. What are the turbo snails?
They're another snail that they used to keep for eating algae.
But are they fast?
I haven't noticed them being particularly fast.
Do they have racing stripes? Are they racing snails?
I never understood why they called them turbo snails. I've had them. And I've had the shells for hermit crabs, too. But I don't really know why they call them
turbo
that.
Turbo snail reminds me of this really weird thing that I saw at California in Grandpa John's house.
Uh-huh.
It was on TV. There was this pink snail that went really fast.
Maybe it was a turbo snail.
Yeah, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me try that again. Perhaps the turbo snails were spawning first, and now the turbid snails have also spawned. I can see a lot of tiny baby snails on the glass now. That's so cute! No bigger than the end of a needle. This is good news for the nuisance algae problem. Hopefully the baby snails will now get to work in controlling it on the glass. I think Russ said some species of snails have an early stage when they swim in the water column. Perhaps turbid snails have this stage. Did not seem a particularly efficient method of making sure egg met sperm, but I do not need that many baby snails, and it is a small tank, so the odds have to be better in a smaller volume of liquid. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99.
That's true. I think many of those species, marine species that have swimming larval villagers, they call them. That's the...
Villagers?
Villagers. Oh. It sounds like villagers, but it's not spelled the same way. It's not quite pronounced the same way. It's V-E-L-I-G-E-R-S.
Hmm.
Is what they call the swimming larval form of a snail.
Okay.
That, you know, a lot of species bypass it completely, including all of the ones I'm familiar with in freshwater. But a lot of the saltwater ones do it. Well, I should say, some of the, like, the nerites have villagers. The nerites that you can keep in freshwater, but you can't breed in freshwater.
They do have villagers.
They need salt or brackish water to breed, depending. Most species do anyway, that are in the aquarium trade. And that's part of the reason they don't breed in aquaria, in freshwater aquaria, because they need that stage. I had some spawn in an Opaula tank, produced all these villagers
brackish.
Swimming around. Yeah,
interesting.
That happened a few years ago. But anyway, coming back to that point of the snails that spawn like that by just releasing sperm and eggs straight out into the water, not internal fertilization like most freshwater snails that do mate. They, in the wild, they often have some trigger that causes them to spawn at the same time. So all the snails of that species will spawn smack on the same dot, you know, right at the same time. They will, and that improves the odds that they'll get fertilized, of course. And that's true with a lot of creatures like feather duster worms and corals and so on. That there are environmental cues or whatever. In some species, it can be the phases of the moon or whatever, something that gets them into sync, temperature changes, whatever, and then that makes sure it happens at once, increasing the odds that they will, that the sperm and eggs will encounter each other, but also that any predators that might be removing sperm and or eggs from the water column will be dealing with so much of it that some of them are bound to survive.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, anyway. But in a small volume of water, with only two snails, like you said, Matt, you've got pretty good odds.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that you have to think about when you are dealing with spawning events like that in such a small volume of water is it can cause water quality decline.
Just because there's so much biomass all of a sudden.
Right. There's all this stuff that's out suddenly in the water that starts to decay. You know, a lot of it's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, whether it dies soon after it's released or it dies a few days later or whatever, a lot of that material is going to start deteriorating in the water and causing water quality problems. So it's good to make sure you're watching that as things like that happen. I know that when, for example, macroalgae will sometimes reproduce sexually and release substances into the water as part of that, and that can really cause the water quality to dive.
Algae has gender?
Well,
not the same way that people do.
Not the same way that people at all, but algae can reproduce sexually.
So it has sperm and egg.
Or sperm and egg. So, yeah, essentially, that's the way it works. So, anyway... It's a good question, though.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Matt has a question, too.
Yeah?
He says, I have asked about the internet book and books. Now onto the other great source of aquatic information, magazines. Do you read any aquarium magazines, and if so, which ones?
Okay. Well, I was a longtime subscriber to Aquarium Fish International. It used to just be called Aquarium Fish Magazine, I think, and then it would change to Aquarium Fish International.
You wrote articles for them.
Yeah.
Quite a few occasions.
Yeah, for a while I subscribed for a long time, for years, and then began writing articles and subscribing.
Mm-hmm.
And then not too long ago, I'm not sure, it's been a few years now, the magazine unfortunately was discontinued.
Yeah.
But I probably wrote, I don't know, what?
Why was it discontinued?
I don't know, the publishing company
just decided they weren't going to keep doing it. I don't know if it wasn't making enough money.
That's weird.
So... Even though I wrote, maybe four or five articles for that magazine or something like that, And then that one is, of course, no longer in existence. I still write.
You could probably find back issues online, though.
Yeah, yeah, I think you can. And then, what's the one? Aquarium USA, which is an annual magazine.
So it only comes out once. They only have one issue a year.
Right, one issue per year usually
but
comes out in the summer.
It.
And I have been in it quite a few times in the past few years as well.
In fact, we just went into like PetSmart and Petco the other day and looked at their magazine rack and said, oh, look, there you are.
Yeah,
that was kind of fun.
That was in a different magazine, though. That was in...
that was in the Marine...
Marine and Reef USA, I think, is that the name of that one. So I'm in that one, too. So those are some of the ones that I've read.
Marine and Reef, is that monthly or is that
that's
yearly?
A yearly,
that's
too.
A yearly, too. Yeah. Okay.
And then...
There was that one in Europe that they sent you.
Amazonas? That one's good. Yeah. That's the one you're thinking of. Amazonas.
Amazonas.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's a good magazine. I like that one. You can get... what's the word? Not episodes.
Issues.
Sorry. Okay. You can get episodes of it online for free sometimes.
You just said episodes again.
I did?
Yeah.
Okay. What did I mean again?
Issues.
Yeah, you can get issues online of that one. Some... Aquariumax has actually alerted us to that one. It is a good magazine. I like the articles
really
in there. They've
really
got
nice.
Some pretty interesting, but also maybe more specialized. I think the Aquarium Fish International is more suited for beginner and intermediate aquarists, mm-hmm. although they do have articles that are of interest to advanced aquarists as well. But I think Amazonas is a little bit more for intermediate to advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're, you know, again, beginners could read it and find interesting
learn
information
things.
And learn things, but I think it's more geared toward a more advanced hobbyist. And then, of course, there's Tropical Fish Hobbyist, a magazine that's been around for a very long time, and they have some fun stuff, too. So, I haven't...
I would imagine any of the... They probably all do international subscriptions.
I would imagine so, yeah. I know that at least some of them do. So, those are some interesting ones to think about. And, yeah... I can't think of any others right now that I have done a whole lot with. I'm sure there's some other ones out there. And maybe even some that I've read recently, but I can't think of any others at the moment. So, yeah, but I do like the magazines. They're fun. One thing about magazines is that you can find maybe information that's newer than you might find in books a lot of the time.
That makes sense.
Like when a new fish comes out, mm-hmm. of course you'll hear about it on the internet first, but you might get some more in-depth information in a magazine, mm-hmm. things like that. So.
What do you mean a new fish will come out?
Well, what I mean is somebody discovers a species.
Or it's available in the pet trade now.
Right. They go out in some country where they haven't done a lot of fish collecting and they collect a fish. Or even in a place where they have done a lot of fish collecting, but there are so many different types that they find a new one. That's what I mean. And then they'll show it in the magazine mm-hmm. sometimes, things like that. So, good question. Let's see.
Do you have any of your own updates for us? Opaiula are doing well. They have lots of babies.
Yeah, every single enclosure has babies, but I think I mentioned that already mm-hmm. maybe recently. We set up the axolotl tank. We said we were going to, but we hadn't done it as of last mm-hmm. time, I don't think.
So we got to let it cycle now.
Yep, it's in the cycling process. We're also need to get a couple of things. I need to put a check valve on it because somehow we forgot to get a check valve. I don't know what
so
I was
it's
thinking.
It's a little too bubbly.
What's a check valve? That's a good question. You know how the air pump is hooked up to it and it's hooked up to the sponge filter? You need to put a little thing in between, you know, in that line of tubing. There's a little thing called a check valve that you put in. And basically, the check valve makes sure that the air can blow only one direction and the water can only go one direction. So if water starts leaking out of the tank and down into the air tube, if it got into the air pump, it could break it. But if there's a check valve in the way, it stops that from happening. Because basically, it's like a little mouth that kind of with lips that are held closed. And if you blow, air comes out. But as soon as you stop blowing, the lips close. You know what I mean? Like that. That's kind of what it does.
I don't know what you're saying.
He'll show it to you when we get to the
pet
store.
Yeah, I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
But basically, the air pump pushes air out, and then it goes into this little place that's kind of like a mouth that's closed. And as the pressure of air builds up, it spits it out. It lets the air
out. It opens it.
But as soon as the air stops coming out, it closes.
To the outside of the tank?
To the other part of the air tube.
Oh.
And that makes the bubbles still go into the tank like they should. But if they ever stop coming, then it closes and water can't come from the tank back down into the pump. It also helps air pressure from damaging the pump. If there's too much pressure pushing back towards the pump with air, it stops it from hurting it. So we're going
to
put one of those in.
So we need to go get a check valve. Because
you really shouldn't have a tank like that set up without a check valve. And then I'm sure we'll be okay for a few days, but we're going to try to go get one tomorrow. And then what was the other thing? We need a...
I can't remember.
We're going to need to check the temperatures that we're getting.
We need a thermometer.
Because, you know, this is the summer, and the next month or two is the hottest temperatures we're going to get, so we need to see how hot it's going to get. We don't have to worry about axolotls getting cold, because it's never going to get cold enough in the house to hurt an axolotl. But it could very well get warmer.
What is their temperature range? What do they like?
They would be perfectly happy in the 60s.
All the time?
All the time. It would be unlikely that we would be able to keep that
right.
without a chiller. But they are happiest in the 60s to low 70s. But anything over 74 is pushing it, according to what I've read.
Okay.
So we really want to try to keep it under 74 in the tank. And we've already taken some steps. Like we're using a sponge filter instead of a hang-on-the-back filter, because hang-on-the-back filters generate some heat. We're going to look at installing a small fan up at the top, mm-hmm. aiming at the water surface. That can help cool things a couple of degrees.
And it's in, you know, it's in Laurelin's room, which is
in the basement.
In the basement, so.
And so that will also help. And we don't have any bright lights on the tank.
Yeah.
Bright lights would be bad, so it would help warm up the tank. So we're going to see what we can do. We may have to figure out something to cool the water even further. We're looking into pumping water out into a container that has... ice in it that with tubing that runs through it and cools it, and then we'd have to replace that every 12 hours or something, and once in the morning, once at night.
If it gets too hot.
We'll just do that for the warm months of the year,
yeah.
You know, July and August. The rest of the months will probably be okay, but we're going to see. It's going to take some while to figure that out, so we want to make sure while the tank is cycling, we figure out all this temperature stuff to make sure that the axolotl is going to be comfortable and live a long, happy life, because they can live 15, 20 years, and that's kind of what we're shooting for.
Yeah.
So, in a few weeks, or a month or two, we may have a leucistic axolotl we can post, so you can see it.
That will be fun.
So, Gwen, do you remember what you're supposed to say? Because I think we're done now. Remember what it is?
Say it loud enough.
You can come over here by the microphone.
Okay, may the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.